Okay, so we are working on trying to finish up chapter 4 of Nehemiah. So we go back there for just a moment, go to find Nehemiah chapter 4, but we're going to leave there here for a moment. Something I want to kind of work on here for a couple of minutes, and kind of, I want to straighten something out a little bit. Someone called to my attention something I said in the last class that I need to correct. I think when we were talking about Sanballat and Tobiah, how they were coming in trying to stop the process of rebuilding the wall. You know, I think I said, and I kind of remember this now, I think I said more than once, you know, Sanballat and Tobiah, you know they had the ability to stop the building of the wall because they did it before. Well, no. They did not stop the building of the wall before. It was stopped before. And we talked about that some back in about lesson 2, I think it was. But I want to go back and just kind of refer to this again, because we need to have this in mind. Go back to Ezra. Go back to Ezra, chapter 4. And again, we kind of talked about this some, but that was a little ways back. And I just want to make sure I get this straight here. You know, in Ezra, which are the events that took place before the story that's given to us by Nehemiah, you know, there was Zerubbabel who led a group back to Jerusalem and they started rebuilding the temple. This is back in the days of King Cyrus, the king of Persia. But Zerubbabel and Jeshua and some of the other heads, of the families, they who had returned to Jerusalem, they ran into some resistance, as you may recall, you know, from their enemies at the time. And so they, you know, the enemies that tried to frustrate their work, much like Tobiah and Sanballat are doing now. But, you know, the work continued on at least for a while. In Ezra chapter 4, it says, when the enemies of Judah and Benjamin heard that the exiles were building the temple of the Lord for the God of Israel, they came to Zerubbabel and to the heads of the families and said, let us help you, because like you, we seek your God and have been sacrificing to him since the time of Ereshkigal, king of Assyria, who brought us here. Oh, there's more to the story. Verse 3. But Zerubbabel, Jeshua, and the rest of the heads of the family, Israel, you have no part with us in the building of the temple to our God. We alone will build it for our God, the God of Israel, as King Cyrus, the king of Persia, commanded us. And now they had some reasons for saying, no, we don't want your help. I mean, they came back specifically for this purpose. But there's a little bit more. Verse 4. Then the peoples around them set out to discourage the people of Judah and make them afraid to go on building. They hired counselors to work against them and frustrate their plans during the entire reign of Cyrus, king of Persia, and down to the reign of Darius, king of Persia. So, you know, you get the impression there might have been some ulterior motives here if they wanted to come in and help. You know, they were now at the point of doing everything they could to frustrate the rebuilding. And so, but there's more than the temple involved. But we don't know that unless we read on a little bit more. So to frustrate the rebuilding of the temple, here's what they said. They go on, they write this letter to, King Artaxerxes, and kind of detail to him the work that's going on. It was more than just the temple being rebuilt, but the walls are being rebuilt too. And this becomes part of their argument, you know, to Artaxerxes about why you need to stop the rebuilding of the wall. You know, now do you remember we talked about that? What was the excuse or the reason that they gave in that letter to Artaxerxes? Why they needed to, he needed to stop them from all this rebuilding?
They'll become independent and quit paying taxes.
Yeah, hey, they're going to get a king of their own. They'll quit paying taxes and you won't have, as the text was said, you won't have anything left in the Trans-Euphrates, you know, in that whole region. And so, I mean, as the text would say, I'm just going to read a little bit here out of the letter that they wrote to the king, or still in Ezra 4, verse 12. The king should know that the Jews who came up to us from you have gone to Jerusalem and are rebuilding that rebellious and wicked city. They are restoring the walls and repairing the foundations. Furthermore, the king should know that if this city is built and its walls restored, no more taxes, tribute, or duty will be paid, and the royal revenues will suffer. And so, king, you should know about this. They're going to rebuild this city, and they're going to work against you. And so anyway, verse 16, we inform the king that if this city is built and its walls are restored, you will be left with nothing in the Trans-Euphrates. Well, the king, of course, replied to that, and he ordered the rebuilding to stop. Verse 21, now issue an order to these men to stop work so that this city will not be rebuilt until I so order. And so, you know, the work came to a standstill on the temple and any rebuilding that was being done in the city. And so then we kind of fast forward. I mean, later in the days of King Darius, when he had seen the decree that had been issued by King Cyrus to authorize the rebuilding of the temple, he ordered for it to continue, go back and continue the rebuilding of the temple. That's when Ezra the priest went, you know, to kind of oversee this rebuilding of the temple. And it was rebuilt. And worship to God was restored there again. Then we fast forward 13 years. And after Artaxerxes gave permission to return to Jerusalem, gave Ezra that permission, 13 years after that is when we take up our story in Nehemiah. When he gets word, what the walls are still destroyed. The walls are still down. And that's where we started our story. So, you know, Sanballat and Tobiah and those who were there with him certainly had some ability to stop the rebuilding that was taking place. You know, they were going to try everything they could to discourage the Jews from rebuilding the city walls. But they were not the ones that stopped the rebuilding before. That was kind of before their time in the story, so to speak. But it had been stopped before. And, you know, there certainly seems to be reference that the city walls were being rebuilt, but it was stopped prior, you know, as by issue of the king. Now, I hope maybe that kind of clarifies here just a little bit the storyline as it is unfolding. Comments or questions? All right. Good. I'm glad to kind of get that straightened out. I appreciate it very much. You know, you got to keep in mind, you know, it does not bother me in the least little bit if you come to me and say, you know, I'm not sure about something you said. You know, I check this out a little bit more, you know, because I might have it wrong. And I'm just perfectly happy for you to help straighten some things out. You know, just be sure to be comfortable to do that. And so now we go back to our text in Nehemiah chapter 4 is where we are. Nehemiah chapter 4. And we've worked our way through a good part of this chapter. And actually, I've kind of broken it into three sections. We've taken a lot of time on chapter 4. But man, there's a lot of events that take place in chapter 4. And there's just a lot of good points that need to be made. We talked last time about how opponents of God often do not quit easily. They can be dogged. They just keep on working against those who are trying to stand for righteousness. And I think that's a point that we can make from this lesson. You know, that here, Sanballat has come back again. Not by himself, but he's brought reinforcements, you would say. Got Tobiah, and he's got... Well, really, even as we looked at it, you know, there are some from all corners, so to speak. You have Sanballat, the Samaritans, who have come from the north, and the Arabs who have come from the south, and the Ammonites from the east, and the Ashdites from the west. And so those rebuilding the walls have got to feel surrounded. I mean, all of their neighbors all around have come now, have opposition, you know, toward them on this rebuilding here. And so as the opposition comes again, there has to be kind of a fortification of faith, I guess you would say. Some diligence, you know, to be able to continue moving forward. And we talked about the fact that God's work, it seems, never goes forward without opposition. It just works that way. Always, it seems. And yet, even with opposition, the wall now, it's at half its height, is what the text would say. And it reached half its height because the people have worked with all their heart. That's been the motivation right there. And so, as we talked some last time as we're looking at chapter 4, you know, Sanballat's come back with another scheme now to try to stop the rebuilding. Maybe it's the fact that it's moved along so fast I mean, the whole thing is rebuilt. We're not there yet, but by chapter 6, the whole wall is rebuilt in 52 days. And so how far are we into the process now? Are we halfway? Maybe the wall is halfway up. Let's say we're 30 days into the process. Can't you imagine there'd be Sanballat and some of those others who are standing back and thinking, oh, this is just going too fast. If we are going to stop it, we're going to have to move quickly. We're going to have to do something right away if we're going to stop it. And so the plan of the enemy was to engage them, to fight them if that's what it was going to take. And so Nehemiah and the workers, they prayed. I mean, we've seen this from Nehemiah already. But now it's Nehemiah and the workers. That's how they responded. But their work is their struggle is increasing too, in that, you know, and the wall's half built, and they've done it in a short period of time. They've got to be exhausted. I mean, they've just got to be flat wore out. And now there's the opposition saying, we're going to come fight you. We're going to stop you. I mean, that'd make a lot of us just say, all right, fine, I've had it. I'm out of here. And there's probably some that felt that way. But they take courage. And Nehemiah continues to kind of just lead them on. You know, if fatigue can truly be a personal enemy, I mean, I think we've all experienced and kind of know and understand, you know, what that would feel like. And yet Nehemiah here continues just to set the course. And instead of the task getting easier, it's going to get harder. And this is what we were talking about last time. Nehemiah 4, verse 13. Nehemiah says, therefore, I stationed some of the people behind the lowest points of the wall at the exposed places, posting them by families with their swords, spears, and bows. After I looked things over, I stood up and said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, don't be afraid of them. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome, and fight for your brothers, your sons, and your daughters, your wives, and your homes. When the enemies heard that we were aware of their plot and that God had frustrated it, we all returned to the wall, each to his own work. From that day on, half of my men did the work, while the other half were equipped with spears and shields and bows and armor. The officers posted themselves behind all the people of Judah who were building the wall. Those who carried materials did their work with one hand and held a weapon in the other. And each of the builders wore his sword at his side as he worked. But the man who sounded the trumpet stayed with me. Now, let's just kind of think this over for a minute. Try to understand the events here. You know, to continue the work, the Jews working on the wall were going to have to be prepared for battle. I mean, now responsibility has doubled. I mean, it's never easy, it's never enjoyable to be looking behind your back all the time. And now they're trying to rebuild the wall and continue looking over their back, so to speak, at trouble that could be looming. And Nehemiah, you know, to encourage the workers together, I mean, he called them together and he said, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Remember the Lord. Now, this is their faith. This is what's caused them and allowed them to come to the point where they are. Is there's been the call more than once where Nehemiah has reminded them of who they are and that if they are the people of God, if they are doing His will, that God is on their side. And this seems to be where they find their strength. This is their hope, their faith. And when all seems hopeless, I mean, even today, when all seems hopeless, you have just got to stop and consider what it means to have the Lord on our side. You know, the news the last few days has not been real encouraging. I mean, the world events that have taken place are just pretty incredible, isn't it? And, you know, if you reflect on that very much, it can kind of get under your skin. It can just kind of get you down, really. I mean, I check the news every day, a time or two. I just go online. It doesn't take me long to look at the news. Just to kind of know what's going on a little bit. And I know about all I think I want to know as far as what's going on in world events that are happening. seems like none of it's good. And you can't help but wonder, you know, at what point are we going to be dealing with more of that right here? Inevitable, it seems. And you get to thinking about that. And it can really get to you. I mean, I've known some people that have absolutely had their lives turned upside down. When they get thinking about that stuff too much, it consumes them and just brings them down. I've seen that. You probably have too. All right, reality check. We don't know exactly what's going to happen. Even in this country, we don't know where things are going to end up ultimately. We don't know. We all have our moments of prophetic ideas, don't we? Where we think we know what's going to happen next, but we really don't know for sure. And if you think about it just too much, it might make us forget who we are. You know, and just sometimes we need to refocus a little bit on the fact that even like these Jews long ago had to be reminded and consider what it means to have the Lord on their side. I don't know what's going to happen in world events. I have an interest and I have a concern about those things. I'd like to do what I can in my little world to try to affect world events in a positive way, but I may not be able to have great effect. But ultimately, in the end, all that's really going to matter is being on the side of the Lord and Him being on your side. And regardless of what happens in this life, in the end, the Lord will sort it all out. I mean, I can't fix world events. And I don't know anybody else who can singularly fix world events. But when it's all said and done, the Lord will sort it out. And I think to some degree that's what Nehemiah has been saying. If we remember that the hand of the Lord is with us, we can do and accomplish all that He would want us to do. And even now, as the responsibility and the workload essentially has doubled, at least in my mind, now they can't just concentrate on building the wall. Now they got to be prepared for war. They got to carry a sword with them and work with one hand, a sword in the other. Can you imagine? You know, I mean, besides just being physically taxing, how mentally taxing that would be. And yet, Nehemiah's purpose here and his encouragement to them is still all the same. You know, that the Lord's on our side. I wish we would just remember that. I wish we'd just keep that in mind. I'm afraid we are. We are tested often. You know, we really are. We are tested often. Satan is going to do everything he can to change us, to discourage us, to move us away from God. And it'll come in many different ways and fashions. We already know that. Somehow, we've got to keep in mind that the Lord is on our side. Some thoughts or comments you would add to that?
Take Doug's thought a little further. The Garden of Eden was a utopia. It was a blissful, harmonious existence with God. Sin came in the world, life became a struggle. Mm-hmm. And it's been a struggle for every man and woman who's ever lived on this planet.
That's right.
Some struggle more than others. Some lot in life is more difficult than others. But life is a struggle. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a struggle. Mm-hmm. As long as time lasts.
As long as we have to deal with Satan. And best I can understand, we'll have to deal with him until the Lord comes.
But those of us who put our trust in the Lord will be able to.
And Satan will no longer be the issue, will no longer be a problem. But we have to get to that point. And in the meantime, remember the Lord is on our side. He'll sort some things out for us. All right.
Well, I was just thinking that after the flood, you know, the people began to build a tower when there was some population somewhat of a utopia, kind of a, they want, we're all human beings, I think that we get this from Eden, really. We're all built to want something perfect, to want perfection. But we can't get it. But there was that time in history where that was something that humans wanted to do. And because they were building the tower in under their own authority and in their own name and for their own honor, God looked down at that and said, I don't want this. This is not consistent with my purposes. And so we confused the languages, which divided peoples into different areas and different kinds of cultures and kingdoms. And we see that the fallout of that throughout history and even to now. And what you have now is the Arab, you know, Muslim cultures. We're seeing a lot of, you know, the conflict between Ishmael and Isaac still.
Always will be.
Jews, basically. Yep. And we're seeing conflicts around the world that has been the fallout of this. And what I was thinking was, it is a demonstration of the wisdom of God when Jesus came, the Jews were looking for a kingdom to be, they were looking for a Messiah that was going to be a ruler that would overcome the Romans and just make them the world power, basically. And we see the wisdom of God in showing that, no, it's not going to be a kingdom that's on a particular part of geography of the earth. It's not going to be a kingdom that has a strong military ruler that's going to subdue other Gentile nations and such as that. But it's going to be a kingdom of the heart.
Mm.
It's going to be a kingdom of submission to the king, who is not ruling from earth, but is ruling from heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter whether you're in the United States or you're in Iraq or you're in France, Paris,
you serve the same God.
Else, you can still be a part of that kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And the gates of Hades shall not prevail against you.
Mm-hmm.
Just amazing.
It is amazing. And to know that we can be a part of that kingdom. And that still has to be our focus, regardless of what all happens in this life. And life may get difficult, you know, in the interim. But the Lord will sort it out. In the this portion of Scripture right here, it just kind of stands out to me again that Nehemiah is just continuing to encourage, don't be afraid. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome. And something that I'm afraid we let slip by sometime. On page 12, on the back side of that, your worksheet there, making some application, looking at the same text, we've kind of looked at basic leadership skills kind of as an application to some of the things here from the storyline of Nehemiah. Leaders are prepared for even more opposition. A couple lessons ago, we talked about leaders are prepared for opposition. Well, in this case, leaders are prepared for even more opposition, that there's more opposition, you know, that will come. Some main points here. I hope that maybe we'll have some discussion on today. Nehemiah was guarded because of the enemy. I mean, he was on point, so to speak, watching out for the enemy. And yet he kept moving forward. It didn't stop him. You know, knowing that there was an enemy working against him, it could have brought everything to a standstill. But he kept moving forward. Some leadership points. Leaders do not allow the opposition to make them take their eyes off the goal. And we need to keep in mind that regardless of what opposition comes against us, we cannot let them make us take our eyes off the goal. And so all of us even have to kind of keep guard and set a guard and keep building. Because the enemy is always close by. That seemingly is something that never changes. The enemy is always close by, and the challenge is just to keep building. All right, some application. Jesus being our example. How did he demonstrate this characteristic? I'm talking about when life got challenging, when there were enemies around. How did Jesus keep pointed forward, so to speak? How did he keep going? What would you say? How would you respond to that? He prayed a lot. It's interesting. I've meant some time to go through the Gospels and just try to count up the separate times where Jesus went to the mountain to pray, or Jesus went somewhere alone to pray. And often that was following some difficult opposition he was dealing with, or it was right before some difficult opposition he was dealing with. He went to pray. What else?
He never compromised the truth. He always kept it the same.
He never changed. I mean, he absolutely stayed the course. Never did he veer from that. You know, a lesson for us to learn. Sometimes it's kind of easy to get knocked off of center just a little bit. It happens to us all. The great tragedy is if we can't get back in line. Sometimes we get knocked off a little bit and we have to work to get back where we need to be. But Jesus just stayed the course.
Nehemiah came to help and lead God's people. Jesus came to help and lead God's people.
Good point. Good parallel. Absolutely right. Yeah. Consider him. Think about Christ.
I always like that phrase, despising the shame.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, he was going to overcome that. You know, consider him. You know, good point with that.
It seems like over and over his message was that, you know, the word that I'm bringing to you is from the Father. And so he relied heavily on the fact that he was sent from the Father.
Right. Yeah, you're right. I mean, Jesus knew exactly his place and his purpose. I mean, he was God in the flesh. And yet, his authority came from the Father in heaven. Never lost sight of that. Always knew who he was. Kind of like some of us have likely told our children, or we were told by our parents at times when we're going out, remember who you are. And it's something we have to kind of keep in mind. Now, as Christians, to remember who we are becomes imperative. Jesus never forgot who he was.
Jesus knew he was born to die.
Yeah.
And his whole mission was to fulfill the prophecy. It had to be done.
He knew his purpose. Never took his eyes off of that. Good point.
That doesn't mean that he did not have discouragement.
Absolutely right. And was tried in incredible ways. You know, 40 days on the mountain being tempted. Can you imagine?
Garden of Gethsemane.
In the Garden of Gethsemane. Yeah, great.
I think a couple things. First of all, that word despising the shame there, that word means that he made it worthless. The shame did not have an effect on his goal. Remember, when the birthright was given up for food, he gave it up for food. The reason he did that because it was worthless to him because he thought
Mm-hmm.
Accept the world and blending in with the world. So maybe we can learn, like Nehemiah, who he realized that those things were evil. He realized that there were things that were holding him back or trying to hold him back. But what he did was he concentrated so hard on the good work that he was not going to allow that to stop him from doing the good work. And maybe what we need to do, instead of speaking so much and letting the evil thing, just like you mentioned the situations recently with the terrorist attacks all over the world, you know, Beirut, more people killed there than Paris, but Paris has been, you know, the shining light
mm-hmm.
there. We see this, if we all do is concentrate and think about that, the devil is winning
mm-hmm.
because that stops us from doing the work
right.
that we're supposed to do. That is to do the good and continue having that influence. When we stop having the influence and start concentrating on the evil, then the church is going to die.
Mm-hmm. You can see with Nehemiah. You know, everything, it seems like when there are issues and problems that come up, his focus is always just drawing the people closer to God, remembering God, praying to God. God is on our side. God's given us his hand. All of these comments in this way, just pulling them closer to God. And I like that. I appreciate what you said.
Okay, yeah. I see a parallel, too, with Nehemiah and Jesus, because Nehemiah is in the process of building
mm-hmm.
you know, through his faith in God, and Jesus is in the process, seems like, of building the church.
That's right. I've come to build my church.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting parallel. That's right. See, there's a lot of things you can think about, you know, when you start kind of, you know, looking at this and trying to make just application, you know, about, you know, how did Jesus demonstrate this same kind of character even as what Nehemiah. There are a lot of parallels that come and stand out. I mean, Jesus lived a life surrounded by earthly enemies. I mean, here again, you think about Nehemiah and those who are working on the city walls. You know, Jerusalem in that day, in the old city of Jerusalem, was not that big. It was not, you know, a huge city. You know, and what was that in the old city? It was about 9 acres, wasn't it? 9 acres. I mean, that's not that big. You know, I mean, when we were there and we had the opportunity of looking at the city of Jerusalem, here's the city walls, you know, even the day of Jesus, and then here was the old city of David down here, you know, it's like, is that all? I mean, I knew it was smaller, you know, I knew it wasn't very big, but now there's a different perception when in saying that. It wasn't that big. And so my point being is that when they were inside those walls, trying to rebuild those walls, and the enemy is outside, even more so it seems to me like you would feel outnumbered and feel the pressure of the enemy that's around, because you could basically look across the city and see the other side. It wasn't that big.
Give you an idea. When we bought this property, we had to build this building 7.5 acres.
Oh, good point. Just think about that. You kind of know about the layout here of the ground around the church building and down to the road. And just a couple more acres is really all that the city of Jerusalem was in that day, the old city. And I don't know, that kind of hit me with, like, I mean, if you're in a massive city and there's an enemy on the outside, you feel more protected. Perhaps it's just an illusion. But to me, it seems like you would feel more protected than knowing that you are in such a small area such as that. You know, Jesus told his disciples time and again, you know, to watch out, you know, to be aware, you know, to know that the enemy is all around. Let's look at some passages here real quick. Go with me to the book of Matthew. Matthew chapter 10. Matthew chapter 10. Jesus had good reason and good purpose for trying to teach and train his disciples to know there's an enemy close by, because, well, there was an enemy close by. And they needed to recognize that. And our point in looking at this, in part, is to understand there's an enemy close by. And we need to understand that and be prepared to deal with that. Matthew chapter 10, verse 16. Jesus was, and he's speaking to the 12 right now. And he says, "Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Therefore be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. But beware of men, for they will deliver you up to councils and scourge you in the synagogues. And you will be brought before governors and kings for my sake as a testimony to them and to the Gentiles. But when they deliver you up, do not worry about how or what you will speak, but it will be given to you in that hour what you will speak. For it is not you who speak, but the Spirit of your Father who speaks in you." Indeed. He's speaking to the 12, to the apostles. They would have to deal with some very powerful and interesting enemies. And they would be brought up before councils and governors and leaders. And the Spirit, as he would tell them again at other times, the Holy Spirit would lead them in what to say. We should learn something here too. That we will have to face the enemy. And we need to be wise about that. Our attitude is still as sheep. You know, sheep in the midst of wolves. But we must be wise. Wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Now, the Holy Spirit is not going to lead us in a miraculous way as he led the apostles. But yet, the Spirit leads us every step of the way. We have what God wants us to know and what he wants us to say. The Spirit still leads us. And yet we should know we'll face enemies and we will have to endure that. Many other examples really throughout the Gospels of Jesus trying to warn his apostles and his disciples about the enemy that's at hand and how they'll have to deal with that. Our time's gone here, but let me just kind of make a point here. Lord willing, next time, I want to just work through some more application. There's some questions here. How might we set a guard and keep building? They had to set a guards around the city, but they kept building. Okay? How can we do that? What must we do? You know, Nehemiah stood as a defender of his people. There's some questions. What lessons can we learn here from through a couple of texts for us to consider? What must we do? What can we learn from these texts and learn from Nehemiah? Think about applications that we can make, you know, about the tactics of the enemy. And what do we need to be aware of? There are some points that you should think about. Write some notes down so we can discuss these things and talk about staying on task and staying focused. And Lord willing, we will work on that next week. I don't have lesson 7 printed out. I just read it over again. I just wasn't ready to print it out. I got some revisions to make. But Lord willing, I'll have that on Wednesday night for you to pick up. And we should get into that some next time. Appreciate your good comments this morning. Thank you.